Good morning and welcome to this episode of the Full Press Raiders podcast. We are about 12 or so hours away from the start of day two, but we're going to kind of step back and take a look at day one with me. Normally we have reporters here. I decided to bring in two of the most astute coaching minds in football at any levels, Connor Roddy, Darius Gillette. Good morning, Connor and Darius.
Morning.
Now, we'll go with our first pick. Darius, being in Georgia, what did you really think that Trevon Walker should have went one?
I really didn't think he was going to go one. I know he did show it at Combine, and it was kind of a need that the Jaguars needed, but I didn't really expect him to go number one.
Now, for me, kind of, when I look at somebody like Trevon Walker, yes, he has, just like Darius mentioned, he has upside that you would not believe. He has traits, but, I mean, he's still kind of unpolished. Do you think the Jags reached here?
I think it's possible. The most that they reach is one, because if he doesn't go one, he goes two. As far as picking the wrong guy, it's definitely going to be a revisionist history. It comes down to his attitude, what he does as soon as he gets down to Jacksonville. I think that the big thing is that the larger risk is when you look at that Georgia defense and what they were able to accomplish. I mean, they had how many guys taken in the first round? Six from that defense?
Six.
Five or six.
Mm-hmm.
The defense alone, all those guys going in the first round, of course the guy's going to benefit from the people around him. I think obviously he's the standout, but you know, that's a risk you're going to take. The guy's obviously productive as of the people around him. And Aiden Hutchinson, who probably should have went number one, had nobody around him to really benefit from. He's 2 inches taller, basically the same size. His work ethic is legendary in the college scene. So, I mean, I felt like that would have been the safer pick, but, you know, if he doesn't go one, he goes two.
Now, moving on to that second pick, Darius, the Lions did choose Aiden Hutchinson out of Michigan. To me, I mean, just from a viewpoint, they went with, like I mentioned, the safer pick. Now, if you had a choice between two edge rushers, one, traits like you wouldn't believe in all the upside in the world, or two, a ready-made day one step in and star type of edge rusher, which would you choose?
If I was in a Lions seat, it's really a start now type situation. I don't see anybody like really compete. I mean, I didn't say competing, but, you know, if I spend a high pick on an edge rusher, at the number two, I'm expecting him to probably start day one, especially like I say, with the Lions and just how their defense has just been going right now. I would expect him to be playing week one.
Now we move on to picks 3 and 4, Connor. You have Derek Stingley taken by the Texans, and you have Sauce Gardner taken by the Jets. To me, this should have been flipped. Which of these two did you prefer, and which should have gone ahead of the other one?
I think Sauce should have gone first. I mean, it's a no-brainer for me. The guy is the absolute prototype corner. He's not afraid to come up and make impact plays on the edge. He's covered every receiver in the game. The guy's given up no actual catches his senior year. I mean, I think it's a no-brainer that Sauce Gardner was the better pick here. It works out for the Jets that he falls to them, but the Texans taking Derek is just confusing to me. I mean, if you're going to take a corner, I don't see how you don't take him on Gardner first, but, you know, I think you got it right. They should be flipped at minimum. The Jets taking a corner, I think it was just kind of a, hey, if Sauce falls to us, we take him.
Now, Darius, extending from that point, you watched just as much film as I do. Stingley's film, when he does play, was stellar, but he can't stay on the field. Do you think that Houston took him on the fact of when he's on the field, he produces, or they ignored the fact that he's been hurt a lot over the last 2 years?
I think they think he's going to get on the field and produce when you go to that cornerback and just in that back end. I would agree with my man and say that the Sauce Gardner pick probably would have been a lot easier. I believe that he can probably shut down the side of a field, just off of coverage alone. Stegley is I see him as like a hybrid safety, physical corner type player. So that can also come in to bite you, like say with the injuries and stuff like that, just being physical, and coming down, making a lot of tackles, you know what I'm saying? Just being extremely physical, which nothing wrong with it, but it also can lead to injuries, especially if you have a rap of, you know, getting an injury. I think it was a splash pick. You know, I really wasn't expecting it. I knew Stegley was going to go high. But just based off of the table, just watching Lamar Gardner is, maybe if we're talking about 2 years ago, yeah, Stegley all the way, you know. But, you know, after Lamar just put on this type of performance and actually doing the 4 years and having allowed a touchdown, that's crazy.
At five, the Giants selected Kayvon Thibodeau out of Oregon. Connor, you have a guy who many consider the second best pass rusher. I think that his traits are comparable to any pass rusher in this draft, but the Giants picked him. They needed something on the edge because they have a bigger type of defense, and I think they'll be going to a 3-4. What does Thibodeau finally give the Giants that they haven't had in recent years?
A stable edge. I mean, when you think about the Giants, it's just the legendary edge pressure is just synonymous with the name. I mean, you know, if you think back to like, you know, Tucker, Strahan, you know, obviously LT, that's something that's always been a staple of Giants defense, and they haven't had it. I know that they really expected that out of Olivier Vernon years ago, but it's just something that he hasn't been able to replicate. And this is their chance to do that. I think that when you talk about ceilings, I think that Aiden Hutchinson obviously is the best defensive end in the draft, but I think that the ceiling for Thibodeau is higher. I think he's got the physical capabilities to go even further than that. He's got unbelievable pop off the line of scrimmage, the way he's able to create pressure. I think that's something that the Giants have been needing for a really long time. And he reminds me a lot of Daniel Hunter from Minnesota. I mean, just the way that guy is able to just absolutely control the outside edge, to be able to push it, to be able to move around the line of scrimmage, play multiple sides. I think he honestly is probably one of the better steals of the draft for the Giants.
Now, Darius, as an edge rusher, you had, you know, explain to people what Ben means. Like, the three of us know, but explain it for the people at home who don't understand why an edge rusher needs Ben when they come around the corner.
Getting around the corner also can change the trajectory of running back. Also can change the steps for quarterback. Then also, if you got to look at somebody coming around the corner and they dipping their shoulder, you're going to have to peek to see what's going on because you don't want to get caught up in that crossfire. And also, like I said, he does good with the run, too. So, I mean, it's not really too many ends. It's like actually firing off the ball at that speed and can control the run as well. So I think that's a good pick for the Giants. It actually was a steal for them. I know, of course, either they was going to get Hutchinson or Thibodeau. But I think at five, I think that's still good value of getting Thibodeau at that age. I mean, at the number five. And, you know, it's funny just looking at this draft. I just kind of look at different replacements. I think this could be an opening to another era, like a JPP era, you know.
I agree. Now, 6 and 7. First, we'll go with 6. Kind of you have the Panthers taking Ikem Ekwonu. Stays at home, kids from Charlotte. Stays at home, gets to play in front of family. The Panthers now with Taylor Moten, they have a tackle combination. When you look at Ekwonu as far as his ability, he is physically gifted. Do you think that the technique will catch up and actually be able to match his physical gifts, or do you think that's a few years off?
To be honest, I think it's a few years away. The coaching in the NFL is obviously second to none. I think it's just kind of the general concept that most fans think that, technique's something you can teach. And what a lot of people don't understand, especially with offensive line, the abilities of offensive linemen are so technical. There is a talent to it. There is a gift to it. It isn't just taught. Like Joe Thomas, was one of the greatest tackles of our generation. It's unfortunate he got drafted by Cleveland. But even at Wisconsin, you could tell that the guy was going to be a Hall of Fame NFL player. When he's in college, you can see it. He's a perennial Pro Bowler right out the gate. Ekwonu, you can see that, hey, the physical parts are there, but he has to make the jump. He's got to be able to handle guys who are way more technically sound. I mean, he definitely gets away a little bit earlier in his career because he's going to be able to be less technically sound because, you know, he's going to have the support, you know, all the way from the inside. But I think in general, he's still got a few years. As far as Evan Neal goes, I think Evan Neal's a great pick for the Giants. They desperately need it. I think that this year there's just a big disparity between the coaching and this ownership. The coaching knows that, you know, Daniel Jones is not the answer, and the ownership refuses to admit it. So I think that they're building pieces so that way when they do find the right guy, they're going to be able to just plug and play, and they're going to be at least a contender in that division.
Now, Darius, you have a guy, as Tom mentioned, Evan Neal, where I'm just going to give you a couple of stats. When they won the national title, they being Alabama, his body fat was 22%. He was 350 pounds and 6'7". He ran 18.5 miles an hour at the combine. That's 350 moving that way. Now, as an edge rusher and as someone who coaches defense, which of the two tackles would be tougher to face? You have a brute, a mauler, and Ekwonu. You have a long-armed kind of different type of tackle in Neal. Which would be tougher to coach against?
To me, probably Evan Neal. Like with a big guy, you can kind of use his strength or you can kind of use his leverage based on just hoping that he doesn't have that footwork to get out there. And you can kind of use your hands and use that leverage from the power he got. But with Neal, it's like you're going to be working with size, power, and speed. So, you know, you may be able to run around, you know, another tackle, Neal's going to be able to actually keep up with you. And that's kind of scary for somebody to be 300 something pounds and be able to move like you, you know, on the other side of the ball. That's actually very scary. That's going to be a mismatch for a lot of people, though. I ain't gonna lie.
Now, Darius, we'll stick with you for a second because you are in the Atlanta area. The Falcons, yeah, they drafted Drake London, 8th overall. I can't make sense of this. The first receiver taken in him. Make it make sense, Darius.
I'm still trying to convince myself to make it make sense. I understood the Falcons needed depth and wide receiver. To me, a lot of people like the pick of London. Like I don't see it as a bad pick. I just see it when you took the pick. Being that he's not the top rated receiver, he is a big body, but he still was not the top rated receiver. And then, you know, you kind of let one of the top receivers go to your arch rivals, which is kind of, you know, it's kind of weird, but you know, we'll see who will have a better little turnout. Jameis Winston or Marcus Mariota throwing into their rookies. But to me, I felt like the Falcons could have traded down and still got the same player and got a little extra capital with it. But I don't know if it was a market for anybody to jump that high to actually draft like Garrett Wilson at 8 or Olivier at 8. I don't know. Maybe they didn't sell it enough. And then, you know, after they started seeing that nobody was really looking for a quarterback, that kind of messed up the trade value too as well. So I don't know if they held on to the pick too long and they wasn't able to get rid of it. And then they just was like, well, we'll just take the best thing on our board. But I mean, I guess I'll hope for the best for him. I mean, big body, 6'5", ex-basketball player, you know, I mean, the last ex-basketball player to play here was what, Tony Gonzalez. Mm-hmm. And he did all right, you know, so I mean, you know, I mean, to me, it's not a sexy pick. I think it's a safe pick. But I'm always with the best available. I know Wilson is probably a little undersized, but I don't know. You have Pitts. That's your other size. I don't see, you know, I mean, of course you want two big body receivers, but to me, I think Pitts is big enough. And I think if you throw in some other just decent receivers and some pieces in between, that could have worked for me, but you know, we'll see how that works, though.
Now, Connor, staying with London, you have a guy who, like Darius mentioned, has the size, the basketball background, but he can make a contested catch. One thing that stuck out to me was he didn't want to run any type of 40. Do you think that, given that Atlanta doesn't, they have a bad receiving core now because Jones is gone, really probably won't return. It's London and it's Marcus Mariota. How deep of trouble are the Falcons in 2022?
Immensely. I think that one of the bigger issues that isn't talked about is the fact that their O-line is bad as well. They've got one or two key pieces, but after that, it's absolutely guys who would just be backups in other places. So I think that the O-line is going to be one of the bigger issues as well. I think that the Drake London pick makes sense on paper simply for the fact that he is the biggest receiver that was available, at least, you know, that's projected to go in the first round. So I understand that because I think what they're trying to do is they're trying to create single coverage for Pitts. And if I'm any team, like you said, the guy didn't run a 40. He's clearly not going to be some kind of barber. There's plenty of film on him. People act like the 40 is just going to change the way that film looks. And I think that for probably the most overhyped stat in football, I think it's clear he's not going to run past people. He's going to jump over people. And sometimes, yeah, that demands double coverage. But most times it doesn't. You match up a big corner with him, he's not going to be able to do the same thing. So I think that the idea is that they want to create that single coverage for Pitt and then move from there. But as far as having Marcus Mariota there, I think they're trying to create this atmosphere where, hey, you don't have to be accurate. You're going to have generationally talented tight end in Pitts. I think that you're going to have to throw these jump balls to London, and we're going to try to create some kind of pressure with the ground game. But in that division, going against some of those defenses, I don't see them finishing anything higher than third in their division. I mean, they're in really deep trouble.
Now, sticking with Connor, we have Seahawks drafted Charles Cross, tackled from Mississippi State. He is just a refined pass rusher. He played in the air raid system under Mike Leach and could always pass block. The Seahawks finally get blocking, but they don't have a quarterback. How long do you think it'll take the Seahawks with all these picks they receive to build back to where they were before?
I think it's going to take longer than most people expect. With all these picks, you think, hey, it's going to be plug and play when they finally find the right guy. Finding the right guy is the challenge that half of the franchise is facing in the NFL. Everybody thinks that, you know, hey, this quarterback's going to be the guy, and it's always hype for the new guy. It's, you know, a few years ago, like, everybody was mocking Andy Reid for going and getting up Patrick Mahomes. That's a diamond in the rough. These guys aren't in every single draft. This draft alone proves that quarterback's not taken until 20. They have no solution at the most important position. They can have great players at 10 spots in the offense. They don't have the quarterback right. They're not going anywhere. Their division is historically tough. The Rams are going to be dominating that division at least for another 2 years. The 49ers are poised to take over as soon as the Rams are down. It just doesn't make sense to me that, you know, that the Rams are so willing to give up Wilson, take all these picks, act like it's going to be as easy to move forward. I think Pete Carroll's gone in the next 2 years as well. Either he retires or he gets fired. He's an old defensive-minded coach. There's only one old defensive-minded coach in the NFL that actually still wins games, and that's Belichick. I think that everything in the NFL points towards young offensive-minded coaches, which is unfortunate because it's against the way that I coach. But I think that just in general, that's the way that the NFL is moving. And I think it's going to be a long time before Seattle is actually back in the mix.
Now, there's the next three picks are interesting because, one, they're all teammates. They all play together at the same time, even though one transfer to Alabama. You got Garrett Wilson at 10, Chris Olave at 11, Jameson Williams at 12. Which of these three do you think will have the quickest impact on your team?
I think Jameson Williams, I'm sorry. With DJ Chark going up there, and they got Hutchinson at tight end, I think that'd give Goff a couple more weapons to work with. You also got St. Brown, who's emerging as well. Then you actually got a run game. You know, you got Swift up there and Williams up there running the ball. And I think they're not going to ask Williams to do too much. I can see him getting a lot of, you know, quick passes, screens, things of that nature. And it's kind of hard because with the Saints pick, I don't really know what you're going to get out of James Winston. And then you still got Michael Thomas and a couple other pieces over there, Harris and a couple other people. So that's going to be hard. And then, you know, the Jets pick, I don't know. The quarterback has to make a big jump this year. You know, I know he was like one of the most sacked quarterbacks last year. So, I mean, if they can get him protected to get the ball to Wilson, you know, I think that'll be good. But, I mean, they still did get, they still added, what, Corey Davis over there. I think Williams probably will have the quickest impact. In the long end, Wilson could be that slot guy that you might need, though.
Now, sticking with you, Darius, you have at 13 another Georgia product, Jordan Davis, defensive tackle. Now, this is the Eagles' defensive tackle rotation. Jordan Davis, Javon Hargrave, Fletcher Cox. Are teams going to be able to run on that? And how much better does that make the edge rushers for the Eagles?
It takes away pressure. Because, I mean, of course, Cox is going up in age. But then you got somebody that's even way younger and can move just like how he was moving, but even moving a little faster. And then, of course, like I say, they have a problem with Jordan Davis just seeing how his work ethic is. I think by him just kind of easing in and then just putting him in and, like I say, still letting him get in that rotation between him and Cox. And I think he can also learn a lot from Fletcher Cox as well. You know, even if this is his last year, you know what I'm saying, to go out the door and, you know, just help the young guy out. I think that'll be a good rotation for the Eagles. And then, of course, the pick that the trade they made as well later on, that we'll talk about, was a good trade to me. So, I mean, this was an excellent pick to get Jordan Davis at 13. Because it's like you don't want to take him too high, but then again, you don't want him to slip too far because he's going to get taken. So I think Philly played their hand right to get right there where they needed to be, and get ahead of Baltimore, because I think Baltimore probably would have probably dipped in and took Jordan Davis. So they got where they needed to be, and I believe that's actually an excellent pick for Philly.
Now, speaking of Baltimore, Connor, you have Kyle Hamilton from Notre Dame, a team that you follow ardently. Now, they have a defensive backfield of Peters, Humphrey, Marcus Williams, and Hamilton, along with Chuck Clark, probably in a three safety type of role. Teams can't really throw on him now. Where do you think Hamilton fits, and do you think that he'll be able to slide in as a day one impact starter?
Yeah, I think he does slide in right away. I mean, that defensive backfield alone, as you had talked about it, is top tier in the NFL right now. It was unfortunate that Hamilton slid out of the top 10, but if you look at the teams that were picking before, they honestly didn't exactly need him. Didn't Malcolm Jenkins retire?
Yes.
I was about to say, he just retired. So I think the Saints probably could have taken him earlier. But as far as the Ravens picking him, it's just a surplus of things that everybody in the NFL needs. You look at top secondaries in the NFL, I think that they're definitely in the top three. He comes in, he starts right away. I think that with the speed that they have around him, a lot of people are concerned about the speed. Again, I think the 40 time is just an over-glorified stat. I think that he is going to be able to come down into the box, make immediate impact, help back up Patrick Queen, especially in the seams. And I think that he's going to make an impact immediately. I think that he's going to be one of the best rookie defenders of the year, easily.
Now, we have two back-to-back wild picks. We have the Houston Texans selecting guard Kenyon Green, and then you have the Washington Commanders, I still haven't got used to that name, selecting Jahan Dotson. Let's talk about Green first, Derek. A guard who is like, who people consider probably the third best guard in this draft goes in the middle of the draft. Do you think Houston kind of boxed this one, or they kind of rushed it a little bit when they could have had a guy like Zion Johnson there or Trevor Penning? Do you think that they kind of botched this?
I think it was a little a slight reach. Maybe they would go with the familiarity because he went to Texas A&M. And, you know, kind of was able to keep a better eye on him, I guess. Maybe they've seen more than what we've seen. They was able to attend a couple more games or something. But, I mean, of course they need to address their offensive line. Of course, I'm probably sure that their next pick will probably be a quarterback next one. So, I mean, I guess trying to go out and fix the line so your quarterback can get protected because, I mean, I don't know if you're going to be able to go a whole year with Davis Mills as your quarterback. I don't know. Mm-hmm. You know, I've seen David Mills, seen a couple of flashes from him, but I just don't see it to where it looks like he is a permanent starter. You know what I'm saying? I see him as a filler. He'd be a good backup there now and then, but I guess you still, like I say, need somebody to protect the quarterback. I still think that they probably could have went with a better offensive lineman, but maybe, like I say, maybe it's the Texas ties or something.
Now, sticking with that, question for the Bulls, before I go to Connor. The Washington Commanders chose Jahan Dotson, which they need a receiver, but they really chose a slot guy who, yes, he's fast, mm-hmm. he's a playmaker, but they needed another outside receiver to kind of book in Terry McLaurin. I mean, if you think about it like this, Dotson at his time at Penn State was used to kind of catching garbage play thrown balls. Now, look who his quarterback is.
Yeah.
Now, do you think that Washington will go with another receiver on the outside and slide Dotson into the slot, or do you think that they will try to shoehorn Dotson into a outside position?
I think that there's no realm where they can have him play on the outside. I just don't see it. He doesn't show the physicality, even in college games, he doesn't show the physicality to go and get the ball in double team situations, even on guys that, you know, he has the burners on. I think as a slot receiver, absolutely elite. But they have to get somebody on the outside of him. I think putting him out there by himself is just kind of a, you know, asking him to be utilized the wrong way. It's almost like a Tavon Austin kind of situation where they just, hey, we're going to get in this quick guy. He's going to be elite in the slot game, but we're going to put him on the outside a lot and try and throw off defenses, and it's just going to result in no production for him. So I think in the coming rounds, they definitely need to get somebody who's going to be able to help utilize him way more.
Now, when we come back from break, we will definitely jump into the second half of the draft where it looked like some of those teams kind of lost their damn minds, but that's after the break. You are listening to the Full Press Raiders podcast on the FEC Radio Network. We are back with Full Press Raiders podcast. Aaron Spiggs, Darius Gillette, Connor Roddy. Darius, you have the Los Angeles Chargers at 17. They picked a plug-and-play guard in Zion Johnson. You have a young quarterback in Justin Herbert. You have Mike Williams and Keenan Allen on the outside. You have Rashawn Slater at left tackle. What you do have is the right side of that line being absolute garbage. Do you think that a guard at this spot, even though, like you said, it's not a sexy pick, will help Chargers kind of get to the next level?
I think this is what they need because the Chargers pretty much solidified their offense to me. I think that backfield, they probably could probably add one more piece to the backfield, maybe. But I don't think they really, you know, they got good production out of Eckler this year. And then, you know, you got a good wide receiver core. You got an upcoming quarterback. This will be, what, year three for him. You know, I'd say protect him a little bit more. And like I said, they spent money in the offseason. And like I say, you're playing in that division right now to beat the Chiefs. You know, and then, of course, that's going to be a tough division. And like I say, you're going to have to score. Like that division right there, you're going to have to score. I mean, there's going to be some okay defenses going on in that division, but I really think that's going to be a division that's going to be a similar point.
Now, at 18, this is for Connor first and then Jared's jumping. But Connor, you, 18, the Titans, one, they trade A.J. Brown, and then they draft like a worse, like the wish version of A.J. Brown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Why?
Yeah. I have this issue with just the general perception that media, no offense to you, Terry, I think you do a great job with your research. The general media networks really put immense amount of praise and pressure on unproven commodities in the NFL. Everybody's excited about the first round picks and all of these great receivers coming out of this year's draft. And, you know, I'm sure that Treylon Burks is probably going to have a great career in the NFL. A.J. Brown is a proven commodity. You have to pay for that. And I understand that, you know, Vrabel comes from this Belichick system and the mindset that, hey, no one person's bigger than the team. And it's also the same team that forces more than 50% of their offense through Derrick Henry. Like, you, it's just the nonsense of, hey, we're going to take this kid who's not only going to have the responsibility of replacing our number one receiver, but he has to be able to create production year one. So that way they don't stack the box with 8 to 9 guys every single series. That is an incredible pressure to put on this guy. He's not a proven commodity. His NFL comparison is A.J. Brown. They like you said, they draft the roundies version of A.J. Brown. What is that going to do for you? When you already have the guy, I don't understand the point of this. You know, I think it's them trying to think that they're just smarter than common sense, and I think it's going to backfire on them in the long run.
Now, there is a similar question to you. You have a guy in A.J. Brown who, yes, the Eagles signed him to like a $100 million extension with $57 million guaranteed, but Burks, the knock on him at Arkansas was lack of concentration. Concentration drops. With a quarterback like Ryan Tannehill, who, like Connor mentioned, the offense is just Derrick Henry heavy. When they do go back to pass with, say, play action, are you going to trust Treylon Burks to come out with that ball?
Yeah, that's going to be the question. He's going to get more balls than he probably would have gotten. Versus if he was a number two or number three guy, he's probably going to get a lot, way more. I mean, he still may do that, but with them losing, like I said, they're coming back with a healthy Derrick Henry this year. He'll be fully healthy, but you don't have Julio no more. You don't have A.J. Brown anymore. You're going to have to find – he's going to have to step up and be a production. Because like you said, they're going to just do like they did last time and just go ahead and stack the box up. When they went out and got Julio last year, they were thinking that would spread it out, which it did for a second, but it just didn't work out with Julio's injuries and all that. But, you know, I think it's going to be tough for him to come in, like I say, and actually be, you know, ready to produce. Maybe a good thing, like I say, and get his feet wet early. And also it can be a bad thing, like I say, just having those bad habits and just trying to snap and turn them, you know, within less than a year. It can be rough, you know. So, you know, like I say, I think they're still going to run the ball a lot, no doubt, with Derrick Henry. I don't know. Maybe they was scared because, like I said, $100 million contract for Brown with 52 guaranteed or something like that.
Yeah, 57 million.
Yeah.
57 million guaranteed. So I think, like I said, they know they're going to pay Henry. They're going to pay Henry a good payday. And then I don't know. I guess they're gonna see what Tannehill gonna do, because he's almost due for a small one too. So I don't know. Maybe let's look for the future. But shoot, to me, for him to do that was a bold move for me. You know, I know you don't want to get locked in or whatever, but that was just, you know, very bold. Because now you gotta, like say, put your trust in, you know, you're a rookie coming in and just giving some good push in the offense, you know.
Now, sticking with there is the Saints draft. I like this pick. Trevor Penning, offensive tackle, Northern Iowa. I watched this guy because it's what to do. And he is a guy that is just, he plays angry and he will get physical with a defensive end as an edge rusher and as someone who coaches edge rusher too. How do you combat somebody who's going to test you and want to play to the echo of the whistle where they're going to try to put their hands on you the entire time?
It really throws your game off. Once you figure out that someone is physical and he's going to stay in the way, and like I say, in the NFL, you only get about maybe, 2.5 seconds to get back there. Mm-hmm. And then if you got somebody that's just going to keep being physical with you, like say, through the whistle, you know, even when the ball gone, he may give you an extra shove and everything. That can also cause you to do tendencies and things that you shouldn't be doing. And next thing you know, you're out of place and they coming right down where you left. You know, he may let you go. They may pull right up under you, throw a screen right behind you, things like that. So it's kind of hard, I say, when you get a tackle that actually can move and be physical and wants to stay physical with you. I think it's going to be a good pick because in this division, really pass rush wise, I mean, to me, you only really got Tampa. I mean, so, you know, I mean, with the Carolina will probably be like the next best thing in pressure. But I think you're going to have to protect Jameis Winston, even though he got the eye surgery, you know, get his eyes back together and, you know, hopefully you can see these receivers this year. But I think that's an excellent pick for them, though, to help out that offensive line. And I think he'll be probably a day one starter.
Now, kind of similar question you have pending, and as someone who's played linebacker, where you've had to come through some of those coaches' linebacker, you're the coach, how to shed a block. How do you combat somebody who, from the time the ball is snapped, is going to want to fight you the entire time, no matter if the ball is going, like Darius said, or the ball is near you, or constantly be in your life until the whistle is completely snapped and you might have to have a referee pull him off of you? How do you coach that to say, hey, you know, they're going to test you, but how do you be focused?
Yeah, the big thing that I always try to teach my linebackers and my D linemen is that if an offensive lineman is touching you at all, take it as disrespect. Get rid of them. You know, you always the goal is to always control your gap and your assignment. But if he's continuing to just sit there and put his hands on you, you're letting him win that situation because all it takes is that half second of a shove is going to create some kind of gap for the ball carrier. So dealing with a guy like that, dealing with guys who are hyper-aggressive on the offensive line, it's the best kind of lineman you can have. Every offensive line needs one or two just absolute dogs in the trench who are just going to ruin your lineman's day. They're going to ruin your linebackers. They're going to look for the chance to absolutely plant somebody in the dirt. And you get tired. I mean, that first couple series, you know, you get blindsided by them. You pop back up quick. You don't really care. That third and fourth quarter starts. You're tired. You're getting hit all game. Your body hurts. He's knocking you to the ground. You don't even see it coming. He's sitting on top of you. Absolutely, it's one of the best ways to get somebody to act out of character and or focus on other things. You're going to keep, you know, you might be a half step slower. And you're going to be looking for him out of the corner of your eye. And that's all the difference in the world, especially in a league like the NFL.
Now, the next pick, Darius, is one that means in the unit. You actually had a good point about this. 20, the Pittsburgh Steelers select Kenny Pickett, quarterback out of your Pittsburgh, local kid. Now, there were people screaming for Malik Willis out of Liberty, but I thought that Pickett is smart because he can plug and play win now, where Willis might take a couple of years. As someone who follows the Steelers, do you like this pick? You not like it? What's the one thing that stands out about Kenny Pickett to you?
When they made the pick, of course the I guess the fantasy in me wants Malik Willis. The win now attitude of how I feel about Mike Tomlin, great pick with Kenny Pickett. Because it's like you got Mr. Trubisky in. Mr. Trubisky can go in. He can probably start. What, maybe week one, week two, week three, if he's doing decent. But I think Kenny could get in there and mix it around. With what we got on the Steelers, you know, we got the back end. We got the linebackers back where we needed to be, pretty much. Adding Miles Jack over there, got Devin Bush, got J.J. Watt. That's going to already be a problem over there. So then you got a good back that he can hand the ball off to as well. We don't have any you know, the egos in the receivers as of now. You know, I don't know, Claypool been a little divish, but, you know, that also can help him. Big body. You got a great tight end, rising tight end as well. So I think he'll be able to just slide in there, and he won't have to do too much. And then, like I said, he got a couple of speedy receivers, and then the way the Steelers run the offense anyway, they want to run something quick, you know, and hopefully DeAndre brings his hands this season. You know, and I could see Kenny Pickett probably, you know, because like I said, I don't see Mitch just taking him to the playoffs. I ain't gonna lie to you. I don't know. But if he do, I'll bow to you, Mitch. But I can see Kenny Pickett probably sliding in, probably like the later half of the season or halfway through. But I'm excited to see this, though. I'm really excited to see this.
I think that Pickett will possibly win the job in camp because Mitch Trubisky is kind of like he's a substitute teacher of this franchise where he's just here until the real teacher gets to the field and that the real player shows up. Connor, when you look at Pickett and you look at that offense and you look at that division, even though the Bengals got to the Super Bowl and were within one converted fourth down of possibly winning the game, to me, the way it sets up, I think the Steelers are the odds-on favorite. What do you think that Pickett will do, and how soon do you think that he will play?
I don't think he plays week one. I think Tomlin's an old-school coach. I think he's going to go with what's known over what could be. I think that's just the way that it works. I think you're right, though. It's, you know, Mitch Trubisky's going to come in. He's going to be there that week one, week two maybe. But once the kid kind of gets a grasp on the game and speed of it, I think he's in there right away. He's got unbelievable talent around him. You don't need – like, and that's, I think, one of the really important things. With the defense that the Pittsburgh Steelers has and the offensive pieces that they have around him, you don't need him to throw 30 to 40 times a game to win. You don't. You need him to be able to game manage, be able to hand off the ball well to Najee Harris, be able to get these jump balls to Claypool, and let them go out and win the game for you. They obviously have Freiermuth, who's a great tight end. I think all the way around, you can trust that defense. You don't need to put up 30 points every week to win games. You can have games with one to two touchdowns on offense and still win. And I think that's really important, especially for a young QB. I think it's going to be a great development year for him. And I think it's a great culture pick as well. I mean, the kid's already going to Pittsburgh. He knows the area. He knows the locals. I think it's honestly just a great pick for them all the way around. It makes all the sense in the world.
Now, at 21, Darius, you got Trent McDuffie, who's from Washington. He is stepping into a Chiefs team, a Chiefs secondary that this is who they have to face six times. Davante Adams, twice. Mike Williams and Keenan Allen, twice. Jerry Jeudy, Cortland Sutton, KJ Hamler, twice. That is a lot. Do you think that McDuffie will be able to handle it, or do you think that a quarterback will be able to spot the rookie and pick on him early?
I think they're going to try him early. It depends on what you know. I think they're going to also help him out in the back end, probably with Matthew. Is Matthew still over there?
He's a free agent. He actually might end up in Pittsburgh.
I guess that I was hoping, you know, saying him and Mika would be nice, you know. But I don't know. This is he's gonna get some action. He's gonna get a lot of action. I mean, I'm not really too high. I mean, on the secondary for Kansas City anyway. They've been kind of getting picked on. It's all right, but they've been getting picked on lately, and they've shown that you know, that's how they make a lot of shootouts for a lot of games. And Mahomes has to put up 38 points and stuff like that. I don't know. We'll see what he can do and slide in and play. Probably play that maybe that slot position, nickel corner, you know, and see what he can get in there. But I think he is going to get a lot of action this year, though.
Now, sticking with you, Darius, we have 22. The Packers select inside linebacker out of Georgia, but not the one who think. They went with Quay Walker, and this is the first linebacker taken. I'm like, how, Quay? How? Like, when you look at this pick and when you look at what the Packers need, when you look at what the Packers lost, what are they doing, Darius?
I don't know. I never know what the Packers is doing. You know, the Packers surprise me every year. I know Aaron Rodgers is always, he probably just ain't gave up. He already know it's going to be something crazy. Whatever pick is going to be, it's going to be something crazy. that's why I think he just got his money and was like, you know what, Devontae, you can go ahead and go. I ain't even going to be mad at you. Because, I mean, it's to me, you could have got so many different other linebackers, you know, from the same team of Georgia. You know, it's like I don't know. It's just like I was surprised when they made the pick because I thought Dean was coming off the board. Like when I seen it, I was like, okay, well, maybe he can fall there. You know, but yeah, I mean, you know, you don't ask for a lot from them because, I mean, that linebacker core, you know, you got I think they lost a couple of linebackers this year in the free agency. So he's going to have to come in and plug in and play. I think with the defense that the style of defense they run, he can probably get a lot of good tackles early. You know, just like how A.J. Hawk came over when they got him involved into their defense, you know, just inside presence, just getting to the quarterback and rushing like that. I think he can do that. But in order for that to happen, you're going to need a guy like a B.J. Raji in front of him, though, I believe.
Now, kind of you have a guy in Quay Walker who 44 college games, he had like 1,181 snaps. And he didn't start full-time until this last season.
Yep.
The Packers are really betting on a one-year starter, although it's a great defense, to jump in the middle. I don't really understand. I don't get this. What do you think they see, and how do you think this plays out?
I have so many questions because the picks fall to them. So many receivers are taken so early. And for the first time in forever, I can't believe I actually was dumbfounded enough or naive enough to believe this. I actually thought, hey, the Packers are actually going to address their needs for once. And they don't. I don't understand it because you draft Quay Walker, number one, picking Quay Walker before you even attempt to draft Devin Lloyd is beyond me. I think Devin Lloyd is easily probably the best inside linebacker available in the draft at that point. But you draft an inside linebacker after you've already re-signed Devondre Campbell is goofy to me because then you've committed yourself to running this 3-4 because otherwise you're taking a guy at 22 who isn't going to see the field right away. So let's say you run the 3-4, but then a few picks later, you go and get a defensive tackle on Devontae Wyatt. And I hate to jump ahead, but when you have Clark, I don't understand it. So as far as a plan, I don't know if they had one. I think it's just hey, we're going to take the best player available, but they didn't do that. And then, hey, we'll take what we need, and they didn't do that either. So, to be honest, I don't know what they have planned, and I don't know what their plan was. But this pick makes no sense to me. Like you said, he didn't start until this year. So you're talking about a guy who couldn't even win the job the first few years he was here. It's not like he's, you know, perennial all-SEC or anything like that. It's not like he's just this absolute dynamite player that fell to the Packers. Not only do I think that they reached, I think they just picked the wrong position in general.
Now, 23 years, you got Khalil Elam, the quarterback out of Florida. You have a Bills team that they have Trey White on one corner. They have Poyer and Micah Hyde as safeties. They needed another corner. Do you think that the addition of a player of Elam's stature will – is this the guy that helped that defense get over the hump?
Yeah, I really like this pick. Elam is an aggressive corner, physical corner. And with him playing on the other side of Jadavious White, which is somebody you don't want to go at either, that's going to be quick and physical as well, going to jump the route. I think that's going to fit in perfectly. And I think he's not going to ask to do too much. He's not going to see the number one receiver a lot. He'll probably see that number two, or maybe a number three or a slot guy. But I think if he gets physical and the way just the Buffalo defense is just coming off the ball and they, like I said, they have a great linebacker court too. He won't be asked to, you know, he can just kind of blend in. But I think this actually was an excellent, you know, need for Buffalo. You know, because, I mean, they still, to me, they can still, I think they still have Johnson corner over there, slide him the slot. And, you know, they can play Elam out there in the outside, on the other outside receiver. But I think it's a good pick. Probably, you know, maybe not the sexiest pick for everybody, but, you know, for me, I like it, though.
Now, staying with you, Darius, you have the Cowboys at 24. They selected Tyler Smith, left tackle out of Tulsa. Now, as a coach, player, as rusher, all of that. When you see a player who has tremendous physical upside, but just green as grass, just the game hasn't found him yet, and he might be a few years off, do you feel as though the Cowboys overreached here where they could have had him later, or do you think that they can slot him at a right tackle when Tyron Smith is ready to retire. They can just slide Tyler Smith to that left tackle spot.
Yeah, I see it as a backup plan, but I don't know if I'll waste a late round pick on a backup player. Especially on the offensive line. I mean, like I said, you could plug and play him, you know, later, but like I said, there's a lot of trading going on during this time. I don't know if they actually traded this pick to get right there, but I probably would have shook that up, see what I could get, and if they couldn't really get anything for the pick. No, they didn't. They stayed with this pick. I don't know. Like I say, for him, good upside. Like I say, good upside, but, you know, just not having that grasp yet. And Dallas really is in a win-now type mode. So, you know, if he sits around, I guess, you know what I'm saying, he could learn something. Somebody goes down on that offensive line, he probably could find himself starting. But I don't know if this was the best pick I probably would have took, you know, at 24.
Now, Connor, at 25, you have the Baltimore Ravens and Tyler Lindenbaum. Not the sexiest pick as a center, but to me, he just looks like an all-pro, Pro Bowler, perennial guy for the next 8 to 10 years. They traded Hollywood Brown to the Cardinals, and Lamar Jackson was appropriately upset. Do you think he doesn't see the long term of trying to protect him, or do you think the Ravens will add a receiver later on?
I think that the Ravens just absolutely create the need to add a receiver late, trading away Hollywood, which was out of left field, by the way. I don't think any of us saw that coming. I think the Cardinals proved that, hey, we're willing to go for it now, which is what they need to do in that division. But as far as the Ravens go, I think Lamar appreciates it over time. I think that, like you said, Lindenbaum, I think he comes in. He comes from Iowa. They're taught to protect everybody on their team. I think he appreciates it in the long run. But right now, it's, you know, hey, you're trading away my number one guy. He's been here since I've been here. You know, that's going to hurt.
Now, I mean, it is one of those things that it makes sense, but I can see Lamar Jackson's point. Now, Darius, you have an edge rusher at 26 and Jermaine Johnson out of Florida State, who he's a guy, yes, his one, he plays with heavy hand. Power is his game, power and burst. Do you think that somebody who has spent the majority of their entire football playing career with one move as far as being able to put the hands on and can convert speed to power, that he can be taught to use his hands more efficiently?
Hopefully he can. Like I said, just, you know, they have a culture for that decent. I know, even though that coach is not over there no more with the Jets. But I think he should be able to get good pressure. I mean, they still have a nice defensive line over there, young defensive line, with the Jets. And then, like I say, with the couple of picks, I really think the Jets had a good first round, even with all the trades and getting who they got and who they're going to be able to plug in. Like I say, Johnson is very explosive, off the edge. But, you know, we'll see how he'll fit in to that system.
It'd be interesting now, kind of 27, you have Devin Lloyd, who will step in immediately for Miles Jack at the mic. And you combine their picks with Walker, and you have Josh Allen already there. You have DeJuan Smoot already there. It seems like the Jags are trying to build their defense first. How long do you think it'll take the offense to catch up?
Oh, man, that's tough. I mean, offense is the name of the game in the NFL. I think the biggest thing that they have going for them is that the division isn't exactly tough on the defensive side of the ball, except for the obvious, example of, like, the Colts, somewhat of the Tennessee Titans just because they're well-coached. But I think that the Jags have done an excellent job building that defense. I feel like it takes years for the offense to catch up. I mean, Trevor Lawrence has had nothing but absolute instability his first year. How long does it stick with him? Nobody will know. The guy's talented enough, obviously, but you know, when do they get the coach right? I think that's the big, you know, the big question. Are they able to, you know, get the coaching right at the top? Are they able to get the offense coordinating right? Are they able to figure out the defenses in their division? And I think it's more of a coaching answer than a personnel answer. They've done a great job building this defense. I think the defense is almost raring to go. I think year one, year two from this point on, but I think it might be a couple years for the offense to catch up.
Now, there's a 28. You got Devontae Wyatt out of Georgia. I could have had a receiver. Now, they draft Quay Walker first, and then they draft Wyatt. Are the Packers, like, what are they doing, man?
I don't know. Maybe they're playing Madden. you know, maybe they thought it was like, you know, oh, it was like, you know, I get familiarity with these two. They can play off of each other. Maybe they can make some plays in the middle. Like I said, because, I mean, you would have to switch to a 3-4, you know, to get him involved. But it's like, I don't know, do you trust, you know, you going to put Wyatt at the nose? I don't think he'd be big enough. With 6'3", 304, he could get a little pressure. Yeah. I don't know, you know, but, you know, I say maybe it could be a familiarity type of combo package, you know, like, oh, we can get both of them in the first round. We can package them together. They've been in the system together. Maybe they can learn it together. They can catch on, you know, if we can get some, you know, pressure up the middle with them too and take something off, I don't know, Devondre Campbell. I don't know. I guess that's the only thing I can think of making this pick, making it work to make your defense work. But just to not address offense again, I don't know. Maybe, I don't know.
Now, we had mentioned Devontae Wyatt earlier, kind of. Again, you have Kenny Clark, you have other players there. They have positions of need. Why are they insistent upon the front seven?
I don't know. I think maybe they've just got some sort of PTSD from what San Fran did to them, you know, a couple years ago, you know, putting up all those rushing yards on them. But again, they're just perennially known for just drafting things they already have. I mean, look at a couple years ago, they drafted a quarterback and a running back, and it was their two best positions on offense. You know, between Aaron Jones and Aaron Rodgers. And then this year you resigned Devondre Campbell and, you know, you have Clark. And then, like, you know, what's the point of getting Wyatt? I don't understand this at all. Are you changing your defensive front? Are you putting eight in the box? Who are you preparing for in your division? I mean, just in general, I don't understand it here. These look like rebuild moves, to be honest. I mean, you're talking about rebuild. Rodgers said he doesn't want to be a part of that. You lose Devontae Adams. You have absolutely no one of development stature. And people are like, oh, well, you know, they do so great drafting receivers in the second and third round. Like, look at Jordy Nelson and, you know, Donald Driver. Yeah, you know, they name all these guys. They weren't good for 3 or 4 years of their career. The beginning years of their career were abysmal. It's not like they came out and they were Pro Bowlers. So you're saying 2 to 3 years from now, guess how long Rodgers' contract is? 2 to 3 years. So we'll see what happens.
Now, there's in 30, they have the Chiefs drafting George Kalafdis, where Kalafdis is the kind of edge rusher where, how do I explain this? He is shells, cheese, butter, flour. He's the already made mac and cheese, where a lot of edge rushers will be like, they have all the traits, but they haven't put it together. He's pre-made. Mm-hmm. He's pre-made to jump in. When you have a guy who has the diversity of his moves but doesn't have a super high athletic ceiling, how do you coach that into taking the next step into a superstar?
I'd say the good thing is he's going to a place of need. He's going to a place where they need pass rush. Right now they're going to need that pass rush up front. He's 6'4", like I said, got him listening, was 6'4", 266. So I think he probably can get, maybe, hopefully he can get, you know, keep growing into that man body, get a little bigger. But hopefully he can wreak havoc, you know what I'm saying, and actually do what he need to do. on that edge. Like I say, he is one of the you know, like I say, he's smart. Like I say, he went to Purdue. So, of course, you know what I'm saying? You got to realize sometimes where some of these players come from as well. So it's like he's going to use his brain, you know what I'm saying, which you want an athlete to do. You know what I'm saying? You're like, I'm not going to go against that. And he's going to just do what he's good at, which I can't be mad at. But I don't say, actually, it's not the, you know, I guess this is a point of need for the Chiefs. Like I said, they need to fix that front end. Especially in this division, they're going to be facing with pretty much superstar quarterbacks in that whole every team in that division with Herbert, Derek Carr, and you're sitting over there with Russell Wilson. So it's like you're going to have to get, you know, we're going to have to get some pressure. You have to slow down that run game because pretty much all those teams got run games as well. So, you know, I like I say. Help the back end. Like I said, they addressed the earlier they addressed the corner situation, and then you go down and you address the outside on that defense line. So hopefully that'll get that defense, you know, going in the right direction.
At 31, counter, the Bengals select Daxon Hill out of Michigan. Now, I just got one question. Why did they bring Eli Apple back when he couldn't cover his nose to sneeze?
I don't know. I mean, he's garbage. It's in general, I don't understand why you bring Eli Apple back. But again, is the conversation, you know, is the topic of conversation not the fact that they can't protect Burrow? Is that not like the thing that's been talked about for years, all the way back to last draft? They were like, oh, you know, why are they taking a receiver? Obviously, it works out because Jamar Chase has a great year. But what lost them the Super Bowl? Not being able to stop the pass rush. You know, so to go and pick a safety and your biggest concern, like you said, is the recent Eli Apple who gave up, I don't know, a billion yards. Like, you know, that's just a goofy situation, a goofy move by a goofy franchise. You know, they just, I think it's just the concept of, hey, we want to make a sexy pick. We want to make a splash. Let's go out and get the safety, you know, when you don't draft your need. I don't get it. It's definitely a weird one for me.
Now, last 132 dish, you got Lewis Seen, safety out of Georgia. This actually fits because you have Harrison Smith already there. Lewis Seen there. They're building something nice in Minnesota, but why are they sticking with Kirk Cousins if they're trying to build something nice? Why can't they have nice things?
I guess I don't know. Maybe they, like I said, maybe they'll make a trade second round. Maybe they'll make a you know, make a splash next round and try to get a quarterback. Because I think they're really in the need of having a quarterback because you really want to get somebody dynamic to be paired up with Justin Jefferson. You can get that, be paired up with him, and Dalvin Cook can stay on the field. You can get all that clicking. I think that could be good. I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, if they can find a way to get Malik Willis. You know, they get that Randall Cunningham type of vibe going over there. But this pick to me was a good pick, you know, because I think eventually I think they lost what, Xavier Woods to Carolina. So I think this would help them kind of replace the secondary. And then, of course, you know, help them with what Harrison Smith is over there too. Mm-hmm. So I think this is a smart pick. And a good pick for safety. Should be a good, quick physical safety as well. And able to, like I say, he probably come down into that box too. And help out with a couple of those tackles and take something off of Harrison Smith so he can kind of play the field. But, you know, like I say, I wouldn't be surprised if next round they make a move.
Now, the one pick that I saved for last was actually the 29th pick, Connor, to you. Like, we're going to go back. Cole Strange, guard, Tennessee Chattanooga. Bill Belichick has 7 rings as a head coach, 2 rings as a assistant. Perhaps the greatest coach in the history of football, period. All the trophies, all that. This is weird to me. This is a guy that you could have had in round 3, round 4. You could have had that guy Sunday morning at 9:40.
Yep.
Why?
I don't know. My thought is I think he wanted to make sure the Raiders didn't get him at pick like what, like 86. I think that Bill has proven that once he has pieces, he can make anything work. He can cover up team inadequacies. He can make teams do what they don't want to do. But one thing he has proven is that when it comes to drafting, he honestly doesn't know what the F he's talking about. It's a really unfortunate situation where he just continuously, like, instead of going to pro days and draft days, he's in, you know, like, he's in the kitchen at, like, a Popeye's scouting a safety. Like, it's just ridiculous. Like, he's finding all these guys, like, you know, employees at Foot Locker where he's finding these, no one's ever heard of this guy. He's playing some other weird sport in Europe. And then he turns him into a pro bowler for a year or two, and then he sells him at a better price to some other team in a wacky trade that he somehow ends up winning, but then he throws away the picks. This endless cycle of torment where, hey, we definitely need the guard, you know, we need the guard help in the interior because, you know, we lost Thuney last year. We lost Karras, is his name?
Ted Karras.
This year? Yeah, Ted Karras. Yeah, we lost Karras this year, and you know, it's just, it's really unfortunate because it's something that we need. You know, obviously everybody wants the sleeper pick and you want this great, you know, weapon or you want this guy in defense. It's just going to, you know, attack the line of scrimmage. And honestly, the defense is top tier, but we just lost JC Jackson, which again is another weird one where it's like, you know, why aren't you resigning him? Or even Stephon Gilmore. It's like, you know, we've had two top three corners in the past, like, you know, 2 years that have just taken a hike and somehow he's going to pull some guy out of the fifth round. He's going to be a sleeper Pro Bowl pick and, you know, somehow this year. But every single year it's the same despair where it's like, hey, you pick some guy and everybody goes, who? When? At what number? What draft was it? Where was he supposed to be taken? But it'll work out in the long run. Somehow this guy will end up in the Pro Bowl and, you know, it's the usual Patriots stuff.
I can't say anything because the last time the Raiders won anything, I was 8 years old and neither one of you were born. Even thoughts yet.
Oh, no. Terry, you guys don't pick until round three. How do you feel about it?
The Raiders don't pick until, like, next Tuesday morning at 11:15 a.m. I just.
But you got Devontae Adams out of it, so you can't.
That is true, but they kept Carr, and I don't like that. It's like, hey, here's the keys to a brand-new house, but unfortunately you're driving an 83 Toyota Corolla. Yay.
Oh, no.
Now,
and the AC don't work.
Right?
Yeah, AC don't work, right?
And you live.
Engine rattles when you start it.
Exactly. And you have to, like, roll start it.
Uh-huh.
Now, Darius, who's the one player do you think that will rise up the charts on day two that you want to see the Steelers draft?
I really would like to see somebody. I would like to see them address the offensive line. Or I do like the outside linebacker, what's his name?
Nick Abedino, Oklahoma.
Yeah. I like that pick. I like that pick because I think our offense is pretty much where we need it to be. I think we could still find another receiver late round, third round, something like that. I think we could. It's not really a necessity or a need. I really want to address corner too. Corner game and get it a little bit better to help out Mika. But if we can get, we can get Tyrann Mathieu over there. That'll help out a lot of our problems in the back end. But those might be my wish picks. Like I said, I don't need a quarterback anymore, so that's done. Running back game, I think we kind of. Where I want to be, but I'm not getting what I want from Anthony McFarland. He's not really giving me as much. I don't know. I guess, you know, but we'll see. We'll see. But I don't know. I think, like I said, we can get him from Oklahoma or, like I said, just the offensive line. I wouldn't be opposed to getting a lineman or something like that.
Now, Connor, who do you envision or who would you like to see the Patriots take a run at? Because you need receivers and you need a secondary.
I know. It's ridiculous. I would love for them to trade up and go get Andrew Booth. I don't think he'll be there when, you know, the Patriots get the pick again. I would love that. I think Booth is great. I'm glad he fell as far as he did, just as far as, you know, hopefully the Patriots will take him. Corner's a serious need. I would love for them to trade up and get N'Kobe Dean. I think Dean's a beast. I think he's probably the best player off that Georgia defense. In my personal opinion, I love inside linebackers. He's the best inside linebacker in the draft, and he's just fallen into the second round. I think that would be quite the steal. But as far as being reasonable, I think we take Pitre out of Baylor. I mean, he's good safety, but he's short. I think they end up taking him, and he becomes some kind of value guy out of the slot. Bill puts guys in weird positions, and, you know, you just don't even understand what the hell is happening. I think it's something of that nature. Maybe McCreary out of Auburn, but, you know, that secondary definitely needs addressing. I think it's something of that nature that the Patriots actually end up taking.
For me and the Raiders, I want them to draft. Honestly, they need safety help. Jonathan Abram, he is stuck in the 80s, 90s. I'm going to hit you hard. I'm going to miss 17 tackles on the way, but I'm going to hit you hard. I'm going to leave my gut responsibility and rush when the tight end, who's Travis Kelce, is right behind me, wide open for a game-winning touchdown. I've seen this play way too many times. I want something. I want them to fix the offensive line. Alex Leatherwood was literally one of the worst picks, where they should just play with four linemen. Four linemen and equipment guy. Or four linemen cheerleader. Four linemen, lunch lady. I don't care.
Throw another tight end out there. We just go know the tight end.
Yeah, right. Waller out there.
He had 15 penalties his rookie season. 15.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
Yeah,
and
that's one of those where the Bama name ain't worth the price tag.
No, but Connor Roddy, Darius, you're like, thank you so much for joining us today on the Full Press Raiders podcast.
Appreciate it, sir.
Appreciate it, sir.
This has been another episode of Full Press Raiders podcast. Be good to yourselves. Be good to each other.